I shook the whole stage coming up here. Some power, right? Hi, I'm Keely F. Very, very good to be here, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. I am so grateful for this opportunity. I wanted to say, first of all, thank you for all of the volunteers. Can we give them a round of applause, please? Everyone that works so hard to put this event together and other events like it, without these events, I don't know where I would be. So I really am very, very grateful. Thank you for the hard work. So first thing I'm going to do is come clean. I have not been to an Al-Anon meeting in quite some time. I moved to Chatteroy about a year and a half ago, and I kind of quit going. So the truth is, I've been very actively involved in Al-Anon since 2008. The truth is I need this today more than you need what I have to say. So thank you for being the committed group of listeners to my story. It just, I'm actually very humbled by that. I didn't know a year and a half or 2 years ago when I got asked to speak at this event how much I would need it. So, Dennis, your story this morning blew me away. Thank you for that honesty. The experience, strength, and hope in that message was exactly what I needed to hear to get started. Because, guys, I am like the only one representing Al-Anon. Like, that's some pressure right there. And for the record, I am not a double winner, so I'm literally carrying the Al-Anon message. You guys understand, you came to believe that you had no power over alcohol. I came to believe that I have no power over alcoholics. And, you know, the truth is I have a slip every day. So the message is just, it's just different, but very much the same. So thank you all for being here. I'll stop saying it, but I'm deeply humbled by this experience. My husband was going to join me, who is also in recovery and has been sober for 13 years. He could not make it, but thank you. Yes, let's give him a round of applause. I'll be sure to tell him that he got that. Thank you. Instead, my daughter got to join me. Thank you. What I realized is that I don't think my daughter has ever heard my story. She grew up mostly with recovery and sobriety in the home. She's our youngest child. That's not the experience the other two children in our home had. So what a thing to think about. All the gifts that sobriety and recovery have brought to our family because of the work that we have both done. And I'm not here to talk about my husband's story today. I'm here to talk about mine. But I was really struck by the fact that this is the first time that my daughter will really hear how crazy and how sick I was. She knows I still am today, so let's be honest. But you know, just the amount of recovery I've experienced. And another thing that's funny is you can tell the difference between an alcoholic and an Al-Anon. I've got to have notes. I have to try to keep myself on track. But I'll also tell on myself in this way. I can come up and speak. I don't have any problem speaking in front of groups. I don't know why, but I've always been that way. What I'm having a hard time with today that I'm very nervous about is that I want to tell my story in a new and genuine way. I want to be exquisitely vulnerable with you today, and I am very good at performing. So I'm calling that out because you may not love my story, and I may bounce all over the place. It's more like a stream of thought, but I'm abandoning my notes. So I want to tell it from the heart. Feeling hot. Okay. So thank you. And that's what I prayed for. I prayed and asked that I might say something that would help one person in this room, just one little thing, and I'll be happy. And I have so much to give back that, you know, the least I can do is tell you my honest story. And the thing I get out of it is to be real and to be honest, like exquisitely vulnerable, with you all. That's the gift I'm going to get today, which I guarantee is more powerful than what anything you'll hear from me. So, you know, they tell us to talk about how it was, what happened, and how it is now. How it was I was a disaster before Al-Anon. I was up all night. I was shaky. I couldn't function at work. I called in sick all the time because half the time I was driving around town in the middle of the night trying to find my husband with little children at home alone. And my biggest fear was that the house would burn down while I was trying to find where he was at. And I could not stop myself. I still had to. So that's how my story is going to be so different from the Al-Anon story, the AA story. I'm the one obsessed with the alcoholic. In the middle of the night, he'd come home, and I'd try anything and everything, screaming, yelling, ignoring, praying, pleasing, pleading. I would try anything and everything to make the drinking stop, to make the chaos stop. And I was entirely and completely unsuccessful. When I finally realized that in Al-Anon, that's when I got willing. And that's when the story changed. So I need my notes just a little, okay? You know, the funny thing is the first thing I did was I got my son to Alateen. Doesn't that just sound like an Al-Anon? I have to laugh at myself. Okay, let me tell my story just a little bit. Okay. So my mom and biological father had me when they were 16. They were very young, and it was chaos. And my biological father got addicted to alcohol and drugs. I discovered later in life that he's an alcoholic. I did not know that because I did not know him until I met him when I was 20. Meanwhile, my mom met my stepdad, whom I call my dad. He's my dad. He's the guy who raised me. He's the one that was always there for me. So the reason I'm telling you that is I went a whole life thinking I didn't grow up with any alcoholism. I was not a child of an alcoholic. I learned later I was. And there is something that we carry, right? So we are affected by alcoholism as people. And so whether you're even with that person still or not, there can be lasting effects. Well, I think there were lasting effects in my home. I didn't know this until I'd been in Al-Anon for years. So that was a big light bulb that went off. But anyway, so I met my first husband right out of high school. Got married at 19. He was 18. We weren't together very long. By the way, guys, I don't date. I marry. Thank you, Dennis, for being vulnerable and sharing that. So I met my second husband when that didn't work out. And there wasn't anything. That wasn't too bad of a deal. There wasn't any real sickness there, that as far as I thought. I met my second husband. We got married. Things got very crazy. Very, very crazy. The chaos. He was the kind of drinker that drank huge amounts in one sitting and then would go plenty and lots of time without drinking. He was a binge drinker. So I understood what that kind of drinking was. And sometimes I would drink with him because, you know, what else am I going to do? Jeez. Then we moved on. It got abusive. We split up. I was very grateful for the willingness to end that relationship. What I will tell you is shortly, or right around the time I was leaving him, he got sober and he shared with me, "I think I'm an alcoholic." And I was like, wow, what is that? What does that mean? And then I thought, well, that's okay, because I'm gone anyway. I don't need to know. So I move out. I have a small little boy. And he calls me up a couple, 3 months later, and he says, "Listen, I think you would benefit from Al-Anon." And again, I'm like, what is that? What is this crazy stuff? So I was like, okay, whatever. I guess I'll give this a try. So I went to a couple meetings, Tuesday night Gonzaga group, if anybody knows that group. It's probably still happening. I went to this, and I thought, okay, well, this is interesting. I went a few times, and then I thought, well, I've left him, so I don't need this. Why would I keep spending my personal time coming to Al-Anon if I've left the alcoholic? What's in it for me, right? So, meet my third husband. And a few months into our relationship, I realize something's maybe a little off. And he comes to me, and I'm just madly in love. He and I had that first date and instantly fell in love. Or whatever you call it. Anyway, so... sorry, that I think you figured out. Anyway, so a few months in, he comes to me in a moment of deep pain and fear, and he says to me, I think I might be an alcoholic. For him, this was a moment where he was being as deeply honest as he could possibly be. He only did that because he actually saw value in our relationship and me as a person. So he was, that was very hard for him to do. And very understandably, I said, I've kind of been through that. I'm sorry, I can't do that. I have a son to think about, and I ended the relationship. That is a part of his story, so I won't share it, but that was deeply painful for him. And I felt bad, because I'm an Al-Anon. I felt guilty. It was probably a healthy choice on my part in the moment, but I felt very guilty, and naturally we got back together. So that's how that goes. Years go by, his drinking gets worse and worse, and he tries some controlled drinking, and he even went a period of time without drinking to prove that he didn't have, that he could. It just got worse and worse. But you know what sat on the shelf? Was my one book I had bought from Al-Anon. And at some point, I cracked that book out because I knew where to turn. And I owed that all to my second ex-husband. What a gift to me. So as things got progressively worse, I knew where to turn, and I knew that there was fellowship. I didn't understand the fellowship that's in this room. I thought this was so weird. I wanted to come in with the hoodie on and maybe ear pods or whatever they're called. I didn't want to be vulnerable. I didn't want to connect. I was so scared when I came into Al-Anon. So I get my son into Alateen because he started having problems. And up to that point, I was completely obsessed, not only with the alcoholic in my life, but also with anything and everything he was doing, and whether or not I wanted to stay in a marriage. So, guys, I would journal. I had pages and pages of journaling. I had pros and cons lists. I had, I had all this stuff. I was in despair. I was just trying to figure out what to do as I'm watching. And the hardest thing to do is to watch someone kill themselves with alcohol, and you love them so deeply, and you want to be there for them, and you don't know how to do it without losing yourself, and I completely lost myself. I had no identity. My identity was wrapped up in you. It was not wrapped up in me. I wasn't even separate and apart from this person. I think that's what codependence is, right? Do they call that codependence? I think that's what codependence is. So this is the point in which when my son, whom I love dearly, who I have worked so hard to protect from the disease of alcoholism, he got into trouble. And he got into a place where he started drinking. And he started, he stole some of my pills. I'd had knee surgery, and he stole my pain pills and took them to school and sold them, and he got in all this trouble. And I had no idea what was going on, because I would put my children to bed at night and realize how much I missed them. And then I'd had no idea. I'd had all evening or all day with them, had no idea what had happened. I was so not present. I was stuck up here. We'd be driving down the road, and my daughter, who was very little at the time, she'd be doing her nonstop talking thing, because that's what she did. And I would say, shh, I'm worrying. I'm on a really big one. I'm worrying, honey. What a devastating feeling to put your kids to bed at night, if I did that, and realize, oh my gosh, I miss them so much. I sure wish I'd spend some time. What did I even do today? Did I hear them? No, I didn't. I was in my own head. I was obsessing constantly. So when my son got in trouble, I had to face a couple of things. First of all, that this is a family disease. Second of all, I knew I was never going to leave my son. So my whole perspective of how I'm going to deal with the alcoholics in my life or the alcoholism in my family changed from, you know, do I leave or do I not? Do I end the marriage or do I not? To, okay, how am I going to take care of myself and still loved my loved ones who are alcoholics? That was a total shift for me. That was my story. In that moment, I realized that I wanted to be me, and I wanted to still be a loving mother and a loving wife, and like be the real me, who I am today. Without all the other bullshit, excuse my language too. So without all that other, the anger, the resentment, the manipulation, because I'm going to talk, they're in these notes, I'm going to talk about my character defects that, you know, I didn't really have. Before Al-Anon, I didn't have character defects, but anger, resentment, right? Manipulation. I wanted to show up and be my authentic self with people. So I get my son to Alateen, because that's the first thing you do. I find that very funny when I think back on that. Like, I made sure that my son had what he needed first. And tell you the truth, I was terrified of what he was going to tell people. I was very scared. And people will know. They will find out. They will, you know, what chaos are they going to learn about in my home that I don't want people to know about? I'm wearing, you know, a shroud. I don't want people to know or see what's actually happening. So he gets help. He gets to Alateen. And for him, Alateen was a lifesaver. It was, again, I'm indebted to this program because of those types of things that we have to offer our loved ones. Thank you for that. So, and the people that sponsor Alateen, thank you. So my son got a lot of help. That was a huge benefit to him. And I thought, you know what? Maybe I should go to Al-Anon again. That might be good. So I get myself to Al-Anon. And good things start happening. So, again, this is not my husband's story, but I will tell you from my perspective, he did get into some recovery by way of a recovery program, outpatient rehab program. And then he had several relapses. And every relapse I took personally, and every relapse made me feel worse. I got angrier and angrier with God. I lost faith. I got numb. I got to the point that I was numb. And just from one day to the next, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know how to live my life. I didn't know how to even with some Al-Anon, I was really struggling. This was where I think somebody said something to me. They said, try an open AA meeting. I walked into an open AA meeting, and this is why I love events like this, okay? I walked into an open AA meeting, and you guys told my husband's story to me. And all of a sudden, that armor and that ice, you know, I was frozen and hardened and had lost all compassion. And that melted me just enough. And so I gained some compassion for the alcoholics in my life. And like I said, I have, yeah. Okay, so my second husband I knew was an alcoholic. I knew my current husband was an alcoholic. Through the process of Al-Anon, I show up at a gratitude banquet here in Spokane. I am almost positive it was in this room. I show up at a gratitude banquet and I see my first husband. So, what does that say? That was very humbling. In that moment, I knew the problem was me. I also knew that I had despaired for no reason over whether or not to leave my husband and end the marriage because I was just going to go right out and find another one. In Al-Anon, we do discover that a lot of us are attracted to alcoholics. So, wow, was that humbling. Right here, I'm positive it was in this very same room. I was wondering if I might see him today. Anyway, and when I did see him, my husband was with me. So that was pretty cool, actually. I introduced them to each other. So that's a gift. That humbled me in a whole new way. How am I doing on time? Oh, plenty. You know, I love it when they tell you can speak 50 to 60 minutes. I spoke one time at an event, and they told me like 20 minutes, and I think they were dragging me off the stage. That's not enough time. You know, you guys might all be done, but I'm not done. Okay. What else do I want to share? So I want to talk about, you know, really the character defects that I have identified through this process. I have so many. Seriously. Okay. So, being right. You know, I do not joke at all when I say that I didn't think I had any character defects before Al-Anon. What was wrong with me? I don't get that. But I have the ability to see myself in this really beautiful, I'm on stage and the lighting is just right. And, you know, I don't know. But okay, that's on the one hand. On the other hand, what's underneath that facade is dark and scary. And God forbid anybody should see it. So that's actually that dual truth for me. So being right, I discovered this, and damn, do I love to be right. I always think I am. Al-Anon has given me the gift of understanding not only am I usually wrong, which is a hard pill to swallow, but the upside to that is that it's okay. I think I thought somewhere along the way that I might die if I was wrong or had to admit it. Imagine going through amends. How could you get through that? And yeah, back to what Dennis was saying this morning, that's not me. I got through some amends. The one I really didn't want to make, because we have a blended family. It's my son, his son, and then our daughter. And the hard thing to explain is that my husband and I were on a break. My current husband. This is hard to follow, guys. Don't get dizzy. Okay, stick with me. But my current husband, before we got married, we were together for about 4 years before we got married. Right at the end, we split up because of all this, you know, chaos. We get back together. We were only apart a month or two. We get back together. Again, before we got married. And he gets a phone call, and this lovely lady that he had been seeing for a very short period of time calls and says that she got herself pregnant. All on her own. So our wedding, when we got married, Zach was 6 months old, and I asked that he participate. The point is that that was hard, you know? But I have been a part of his life since he was a baby. And at first, when she was pregnant with him, she set out a parenting plan that was very generous. Then when she had him, that all completely changed, which I understand. You know, it's not easy. I had actually originally a lot of compassion for her being a single mom myself at some stage in my life. But then that compassion, because she didn't behave right, that compassion went out the window. And it developed into a very toxic, angry, court hearing filled 14 years. 14 years of fighting, which it is because of this program that it's not still happening today. Okay? That's the truth. So I had done a lot of amends, but I was not doing that one. And I thought, oh, this it'll be fine. It'll be fine. Told my sponsor, nah, it's fine. You know, I've written my own letter and I've just tucked it away. It's, you know, it's good enough. It's off. It's off my heart. It's off my mind. I'm healed. And what brought me to my knees was seeing my stepson in pain. I think this program and my higher power gave me the ability to see the pain that I was causing. Little old innocent me, you know. No, I came face to face with it, and I was devastated. I considered myself a very loving and wonderful mother, and I had treated my steps. I'm not even looking over here. I'm so sorry. I love all of you. There's the other Keely in the room, by the way. I got to meet her this morning. That's cool. Sorry. Distracted. When I came face to face with that realization, because in my mind, it's simple math. She's 99% wrong, and I'm only 1%, you know, if that. And you could round down, really, honestly. So does that really even count? No. So, like, really genuinely confronting that was deeply painful, which is why there was so much lie, you know, that I was lying to myself. It was just the one place I wasn't going to go was that amend. So I got the courage. Thank you, higher power. Thank you, Al-Anon. Thank you, AA. I got the courage. And you know what? I get to be good because I did it before my husband did it. Yeah. Because we were both in recovery, and by God, I wasn't going to let him beat me. Uh-uh. No. Because I'm right. Anyway, so I wrote a letter. And because I knew it was just a start. My amend to her was a living amend. I knew I had to make a living amends. So I started with the letter. And on Mother's Day, she emailed me back. And she's still, you know, not my favorite person on the planet, but still. What happened was she sent me a really, really lovely email on Mother's Day, and she told me that she knew that I was the one who had always taken care of her son. She knew that she was comforted by the fact that I had always been there and that I had treated him like my own. I never knew that. I thought she hated me. She had been comforted by that. I mean, she could have said something, but still... She finally did, and it was because of this program. So shortly after that, we all went to Hoop Fest. For those of you who don't know what that is, three-on-three basketball tournament here in Spokane. It's quite famous. You should know about it by now. Shortly after that, we all went to Hoop Fest, and we stood next to each other for the first time in 14 years. the gift I got to give my stepson that day, and it is all because of this program and my willingness to work it. What a gift. So what else? So then I also get to experience life today with sobriety. So much so that I forget to go to Al-Anon. Like, first of all, I don't think that's the right way. I think continuing in my program is probably the best way, right? Which is why I'm here today. There was a part of me towards the end that thought, I don't deserve to be up here. I shouldn't be talking about my story. You guys need to hear from someone who's working their program and actively. There's so much recovery in our family, you can almost forget to keep going. That's not good. But then, guess what? I get this eye-opening realization a day or two ago. Holy shit, do I need this program again? So I'm going through my notes, right? I'm looking through them. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to kind of prepare, get up here and speak. I start reading the things that I have written, because what I do is stream of thought. I really do. So my whole bag is full of a trillion notes that I've taken over. How long have I been in Al-Anon? I can't do that math. That's too much math. A lot of years, 2008. I'm reading some of this, and I'm like, geez, there's some really good stuff here. I should try some of these things. I'm like, I need this meeting today more than anyone else in this room. So what a great opportunity to get to stand up here and be reminded of all that I've been given, how far I've come, how far I need to go, and that I'm in the right place. And to share that with people who get it. I remember before Al-Anon, the people in my life were so sick of me. They were sick of hearing my woe is me. Why don't you just leave him? You know, why do you put up with that? They did not understand this disease. They did not understand. To them, it's just so black and white. It's so clear. It's so easy. What they didn't understand is, I don't even know. Right? Because there's so much that they don't understand, but that this truly affects everyone that comes in the wake and the path of it. My whole family had been affected. I hadn't realized that. How could they be? They were deeply affected. So the process of recovery is not only facing that, but facing my part in it. You know, it's so easy, I don't say that lightly, but it's so easy for the alcoholic to see their part in things. I don't know, maybe just for me, it is so hard for me to see my part in things. What my higher power confronted me with was that I choose alcoholics. It began with me. What? That's a hard pill to swallow. To go from thinking, oh my God, it's all about, he just won't quit drinking, blah, 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 blah. No. And once you see that and confront that, you can never unsee or ununderstand that. It's there. It lives with you. So I get to come into these rooms and I get to talk about my experience, strength, and hope. And my recovery and my character defects, which again, I never had any before this program. So being right. And how often that really gets in the way of who I am. I'm so focused on that. If being wrong is still scary, but the more often I can admit it, the easier it gets. And when I do, a little part of me heals just a little bit more. In Al-Anon, it's very easy for us to just keep that focus on the alcoholic and what they're doing. But really, on a daily basis, if I take a daily inventory, you know, I don't get by an hour without a slip of some sort. So that's humbling. I also focus on others. And it isn't just the alcoholic. That's another thing I learned here. So I focus on everyone around me. What are they doing? What are they not doing? How can I manage? How can I fix? How can I manipulate? How can I get what I want? And, you know, I'm done calling it people-pleasing. I'm done. Because it's not. The only person I'm actually trying to please is me. Because I want to feel safe. I want to be okay. I want to look good. I want to be right. It doesn't have to do with you. I mean, there is, of course, underlying all of that, a genuine love and care for the people around me. But on top of that is very thick layers of bullshit. I was deeply focused on how my marriage wasn't, so much to the point I couldn't see what it was. Outside help helped us tremendously. I'm a big fan of outside help. We have had lots and lots of counseling and outside help. What was so cool about that is, you know, and I have had some outside help that wasn't super helpful. So it all depends on the experience. But we have had someone in our lives that has been very helpful and understands this program and this disease. And as a result, there were a few occasions. By the way, I left by Uber, walked out the door a couple times by Uber, by myself. But I came back. So there were a few times that I would just complain and complain and complain, and he would look me in the eye, the counselor, because God help me if Wade said this. But anyway, the counselor would look me in the eye and say, "Yeah, Keely, I get that. But he's sober." He'd say, "Yeah, Keely, I understand that must be difficult, but he came home last night. You guys had dinner at the table together. Those were humbling conversations. It reminded me, oh, yeah, because it didn't used to be that way. Bless you. It didn't used to be that way. I had no idea when he would even come home." So what a cool thing to remember that recovery has given us as a family. And gratitude, that helped me with gratitude. I started somewhere. I started with the little things for gratitude. I started with, yeah, he's sober. I'm very lucky. Not all of us are lucky enough to say that our loved ones are sober. I feel very lucky my loved ones are sober. Thanks to you. Not everybody gets that. But I will also say it's only the beginning. Okay? Life and sobriety. Woo! That's where it gets real. Like, my husband wanted to participate in raising our children all of a sudden. I didn't like that. I did not like that. He wanted to negotiate. I mean, we were in counseling to start negotiating how to do things. I didn't like that. I was quite used to, thank you very much, running the show and being the boss and then the martyr. So I was getting something out of that. It was very difficult to get used to a life of sobriety where we have to negotiate and we have to talk things over. Another character defect. Expectations. So I'm not going to bring up non-conference approved stuff, but I will tell you I heard this something recently about expectations versus agreements. And that was eye-opening. Like, an expectation is almost always, like 100% of the time, it is uncommunicated. An agreement takes effort. It requires communication. It requires discussing things in advance and coming to an agreement. Wow. And it's powerful because people get a say, they talk about it in advance, and there's no upset. Right? Well, that, I knew nothing about that. All I knew was expectations, and I had all of them, and they were everywhere. And all I was pissed off because it's, what do they call it, a premeditated resentment. That's all it really is. If you're not going to tell someone, Keely, what the expectation is, how could they possibly fulfill it, and why do you believe you're entitled to that? So, and I've even heard it said, in this program that there's a reasonable expectation versus an unreasonable expectation. Well, I think most of mine were unreasonable anyway. But I'm not even so sure that's true. I think where I want to go now is I want to have the courage to take care of myself enough to come to you or anyone to ask for an agreement. Wouldn't that be more powerful? How would life look if I asked my higher power to help me with actually doing some work and having an agreement? And so I'm not doing that yet, but it's so good that I might try it. Oh, man. Fear. Am I good? Okay. Fear. I grew up with an uncontrollable rage that I did not understand. I still don't to this day, and it still pops up sometimes. The only thing I think I understand about it is that it comes from very, very deep fear. And so I understand it a little differently now. Sometimes if I have some sanity, I can tap into that and say, okay, what is it I'm really afraid of? And that really works for me because fear was controlling my life. That was what it was all about. I was just afraid. I was terrified. I was so afraid that I couldn't function. So recognizing what fear is and talking about it, writing it down, sharing it with a sponsor, sharing it with a trusted friend, or the person I'm actually in the conversation with. You know, if I can talk about what I'm afraid of, it's scary. But if I can do it, all the air comes out of it. It's like a sail on a sailboat, and just the air comes out of it, and everything gets still. Doesn't mean the fear necessarily goes away, but there's something, the scary part of it goes away. So, and fear leads to rigidity for me, and I don't want to be that rigid person. I want to go with the flow. I want to be okay with what happens. Al-Anon has brought so much of that to my life now. I mean, not as much the last year and a half, but you know, up until about a year and a half ago, I was just really feeling like I could go with the flow so much better than I could before. I practiced this thing. Those of you that did hear me speak in Leavenworth, I talked about it then because that's really when it came about for me, is I have this undisturbed Thursdays. And when I remember to practice it, it is a true gift to me. So I'll be on the road driving somewhere and I'll just be like, you know, it doesn't matter. They can cut me off. In fact, guess what? I'm going to let you in because this is undisturbed Thursday. And I just have a new mindset, and today nothing's going to bother me today. I will let nothing interfere with this relaxation I've got going on, this mindset. Undisturbed Thursdays, try it. It's powerful. When I remember to try this, it's, you know what it does though, is it reminds me again that this is only about me. I can't control what anybody does on the roads. How dare they? But they have nothing to do with me. But what I have complete and total control over is my reaction. How am I going to give my serenity away? If my serenity matters to me, why would I give it away to the person driving in front of me? I don't even know that person. What kind of gift is that to give? And they don't appreciate it. Why would I do that? Flexibility comes from trust and faith. If I want my flexibility back, my go with the flow spirit back, and that's what this is all about, right? The spirit within. If that's the spirit I want within me, then I gotta quit giving it away. So, great reminder for me. And by the way, that doesn't mean that I can't plan. big lesson for me is that planning in my life creates a structure that I want, gives me opportunities for responsiveness and security. When we as a family do some planning, we all get to have what we want. What? You know, I hate that because you have to be accountable. You have to negotiate. You have to talk up front. You have to, what would you like to do? What would you like to do? I don't know. What would you like to do? I hate that. I hate it. But when we do it, amazing things happen. So planning and creating structure is not being rigid. You actually find some freedom to be flexible in and around the plans. I had no idea that planning would give me freedom. It's like, holy crap. What a concept. Okay, let's see. Here's a big long list of my character defects, okay? I'm selfish. I want my own way. And it's always under the guise of, oh, I love you and I'm here to help you and what can I do and I'm support. No. I just want my own way. I want it to come out the way I want it. I want you to act the way I want you to act. Don't embarrass me. Behave yourself. Arrogance. Self-justification. I can rationalize my way out of a box. I rationalize everything. That's why coming into Al-Anon, I had no idea that I had character defects, because I had an explanation, a very sound argument for every one of those things. I am retaliatory and vengeful when I don't get my way. Ugh, I hate that. That's not who I want to be. That's awful to admit. But there's power in admitting it. I'm controlling, manipulative, critical, harsh. I am judgmental. I'm demanding. Somebody told me I was demanding. I don't remember where that came up the first time. I'm like, that is awful. But I am. I can be very egotistical. So I'm a business owner, and that's not good for me at times. So when my husband and I first started our business, it was really, because I knew the kind of boss I wanted to be. I had had some really horrible bosses, and I knew very clearly in my heart that I was never going to be like those people. And so, you know, I set about with a really big intention, but it is so easy to, thank you, it's so easy to slip into, I thought you were just agreeing with me, Chris. That's my 5-minute warning, thank you. Okay. It's just so easy to slip into this idea that, oh, look at me, I'm so cool, I own a business. No, no, that's not good. And it brings about my inauthentic self. I'm so aware today that I just want to be my authentic self, which is why I'm taking attack differently today, because I'm a performer. I could stand up here and make jokes all day, and we could have a great time. That's not what I want for this speech. That's what I wanted, was to connect with all of you, to share from my heart as openly and honestly as possible, and to have an experience with you all, and for you all to have an experience together, not for me to entertain, which is too easy for me. So another thing, I set people up. So uncommunicated expectations really is a setup. I'm setting you up for failure because you don't even know what I expect of you, and you're going to fail. And then I get to wallow in your wrongness and my rightness. That's a setup. I make you wrong before you had a chance to do anything. I still do this. I still see this. I make other people my higher power. Codependence. It's all about how you make me feel, what you do for me, what I need and what I want, and that my happiness is dependent upon your actions. But today, that's changing. And I'm back in the rooms. I'm back here. I'm back here for good. I'm grateful for this opportunity. I'm not kidding when I say I needed this more than you guys did. So thank you for granting me the opportunity to stand up here before you and share my story. Thank you for being here.